Today's Tensho will be on Case 38 in the Book of Serenity. Case 38 is entitled Linji's True Person. Introduction: taking a thief for one's son, taking a servant for the master. Can a broken wooden ladle, be your ancestor's skull? A donkey saddle rim is not your father's jawbone either. When breaking earth, separating reeds, how do you discern the master? Case. Lin Ji said to the assembly, there is a true person with no rank, always going out and in through the portals of your face. Beginners who have not yet witnessed it, look, look. Then a monk came forward and said, what is the true person of no rank? Lin Ji got down from the seat, grabbed and held him. The monk hesitated. Lin Ji pushed him away and said, the true person of no rank. What a piece of dry crap he is. Verse. Delusion and enlightenment are opposite, subtly communicated with simplicity. Spring opens the 100 flowers in one puff. Power pulls back 9 bulls in one yank. It's hopeless. The mud and sand can't be cleared away, clearly blocking off the eye of the sweet spring. If suddenly it bursts forth, it would freely flow. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming to this wonderful August sesshin. It's just wonderful to be here practicing Zen with each of you. Some of us have practiced for a year or two together, and some of us have practiced for more than 10 years, sometimes more than 14 years. August is like a wonderful opportunity for sesshin. We've had a very cool summer, very unusual, and sometimes it's been hard to believe that it was New Jersey, you know. I got up some mornings and it was almost cold. It was like the Pacific Northwest, which is actually quite nice. But this is classic New Jersey weather, right? You know, this is how New Jersey is supposed to be in the summer. And it's really humid, you know. When we do the floors, we have to be careful. Those mops should barely be damp, you know. We really have to drain those mops. Because if you mop the floor and we come in to sit, and then we get up after an hour of sitting and we come out, the floor is just as wet as when we mopped it, you know. So please, you know, when you mop, really that mop should, you should probably start with a dry mop and then just running it over the floor, it'll get wet, you know. It's this classic New Jersey, you know. It's probably in the 90s today, or the high 80s. And the humidity is very high. And it's possible to really hate this. You know what I mean? You could really hate it. When we get up to recite the sutras, you know, I put on my robes and it's really hot in these robes. They're not winter robes. They're all-season cotton poly robes. So I can wear them in the winter and I can wear them in the summer. But in August, they're hot, you know. And I just sit down on the cushion and I start to perspire. And it's sweating all day. From the time, you know, I sit down on the cushion until the time we go to bed at night. And it's possible to really hate that. But it's such a missed opportunity, you know. You know, we could close the windows and we could turn on the air conditioner. Then we wouldn't hear that. When my father was dying of cancer, we put his bed in a room where he could look out. And he could listen to that sound. You know, what a lucky man. You know? So beautiful. That's like most beautiful sound. And if you're in the right mind, you know, it's actually quite wonderful to be sitting in the sweaty heat. It's really like the most beautiful experience. It really is. This is our true self. This is our true self, you know. In the winter, it's cold. And it's really wonderful to experience cold as true self. And in the summer, it's hot. And it's really wonderful to experience heat as true self, you know? We all have preferences, right? I mean, our whole civilization is built on fine-tuning preferences. So, you know, when it's summer, we have air conditioning. And, you know, if it's 85 outside, you can keep it at 70 inside. And if it's 50 outside, you can put it at 70 inside. But something is lost when we do this, you know. It's like there's a bigger life. You know, all around us, this planet is such a big life. You know, the birds are singing. You know, insects are singing. Wind is blowing. Last night, you know, wasn't that incredible? That thunder and lightning. Oh my God, so beautiful. You know, if we had had the air conditioner cranked up, you might not even notice it. You know, people in their houses watching television don't even know. You know, and maybe they hear a few claps, and maybe the TV starts blinking. You know, it interferes with the cable reception or the Comcast reception. You know, what a pity. You know, I personally think it would be really sad to be coming to the end of my life thinking about all the TV shows I've seen. You know? I'm so lucky to have spent many sesshins, you know, sweating like a pig, listening to the wind. And at first, you know, you don't like it, you know, especially because we've conditioned ourselves. You know, we've created this world which is very artificial. It's worth remembering that the world is like, 14 billion years old, the universe, and the Earth is like 4.5 billion, something like that. And humans have been humans for about 200,000 years, maybe. And air conditioning has only existed like in the last 100 years. So all of our fellow human beings for hundreds and hundreds of generations, when it was hot, they were just hot. And when it was cold, they were just cold. And we can think, oh, those poor guys, you know, those poor, but they didn't, it wasn't like that. You know, when you sit on the cushion and it's sweaty and hot and you think, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this. You know, if you watch your breath and you follow the breath out, Or if you call mu and you go into that emptiness, you know, sooner or later, everything turns around. And everything becomes part of your body. It's like, this is my body, you know? In the Diamond Sutra, it actually says it's like a big body. There's a line in the Diamond Sutra that doesn't seem to make any sense. And the Buddha said, it's like a big body. It's like, this world is my body. This world is my flesh and blood. You know, this heat is my heat. You know, the sun in the sky is my sun. The boundary between ourself and the world is really artificial. And Zen is all about living like a bigger life. Bigger life. We have created a very small life, in my opinion. And this is our chance to live a bigger life. And I think that people are just dying to do it. I think they're just dying to do it. People have like this deep impulse to connect, and the culture doesn't tell them how to do it. You know, the culture gives people a lot of, in my opinion, like a lot of bad instructions. Because, in my opinion, the culture is just interested in getting you to buy something. Or it's interested in controlling you. But the truth is, there's a part of us which already knows that it's the world is our body. You know, there's a part of us, and we get so locked up. You know, we're made to be so afraid. A person I know told me a story. And it was like this. He had a friend who invited him to go out with him. And his friend and he went to a social event near Rutgers. And the friend had, they were meeting, it was two guys, and they were meeting women. And this guy was I don't know how to put it, but he was a typical, well, maybe not typical, but he wanted to be like a seducer on this occasion. He went to this event thinking, I'm going to score. Right? And of course, naturally, fortunately, he didn't score. And then he went back to his room and he was devastated because his motives were a deep sense of inadequacy, insufficiency. He went back to his room feeling like a failure as a man, this guy. This is all like so pathetic, isn't it? I mean, let's say you could meet a new person, you know, and so you could go out and meet somebody you've never met before, and she could be interesting. You know, everybody's interesting, really. Maybe the person's had an interesting life, maybe the person has a different outlook. You know, if you just encounter somebody without presupposition or an agenda, or a sinister agenda, or something, you know, it can be the most wonderful thing in the world. You know, if you just meet somebody and you say, I'm just interested in meeting you, you know, I have no agenda, and you really don't, you know, then it becomes like the most beautiful experience. You probably aren't going to marry the person, but you encounter somebody who's really wonderful, you know. I hope I'm making sense, but this poor guy had received so many wrong messages from his culture, right? He was like socialized into seeing his exchanges with young women in terms of like predator-prey relationship. And of course, his self-esteem hung on being like a good predator. This is like a nightmare. You know, when I heard this story, I actually just felt so sad, because this is just so wrong, right? I mean, the chance to meet somebody new is so rare in life. You know, when you're 50-some years old, it's very difficult actually to meet new people, believe it or not. And to meet somebody who has a fresh perspective, who's young and optimistic and so on, that's great, very exciting. It's very nice. It's very beautiful. And sometimes people surprise you. You know, they seem so ordinary. When you get to know them, they're like extraordinary. Anyway, this poor guy missed all of these opportunities because he came to this event with a socially scripted agenda. And it was sick, in my opinion, like a sick script. He was using somebody else to please his imaginary friends, or trying to use somebody else to feel better about himself by pleasing his friends. That's like a false life, in my opinion. But it's possible to live in a completely different way, which is to be like constantly encountering people and things in an open-hearted way, and without expectations, without any agenda. You know, there's something quite sleazy about a person who goes out to dinner with other people trying to quote-unquote score. But you know, actually there's something quite sleazy about people who do zazen trying to have kensho, you know? Because it's not so different, you know? It is quite different, actually. But I'm, for rhetorical purposes, I'm making a connection. It's quite different, but it's still an agenda, right? When we are just sitting on the cushion and we're just trying to be in the moment without any agenda, without any expectation of a reward. Or a payoff, or benefit. You know, we can welcome the moment with great generosity and openness. And it won't let us down. It won't disappoint us. It won't. And when we do this, it's like coming home. Yeah? Everything becomes very nourishing. Everything becomes very sustaining. This is, one way of thinking about Zen. You know, it's everything is our rice. You know, everything is rice. It's just we're not ready to eat it. Now, you know, we're not always, rice is not always what we ordered. You know what I mean? So, you know, maybe you're not in good health. You can say, well, this is not the rice I ordered. But, you know, actually, being sick is an interesting experience. It is. Nobody likes to be sick. But actually, being sick is an interesting experience. And interesting experiences can open us up in ways that are quite unpredictable. So, nobody likes ill health, but actually, When your health gives way, you can get angry, or you can be upset, or you can feel like boo-hoo. But you can also have a deep relationship with life. No? Because you let go and you open up, and the moment is going to unfold as it's going to unfold, and you can experience it as like your body, or you can experience it as your enemy, or many different other ways of experiencing it. But really, if you experience it as your body, as yourself, life becomes this one, has this property of like being very whole and very alive. Everything comes alive, you know. Ordinarily, things are quite dead around us. This is why people go through life so oblivious, you know, quite oblivious. And it's because their way of experiencing things is deadening. You know, when we drove up yesterday, I'm sure you saw the deer. You know? Very beautiful. There are people in New Jersey who don't like deer. You know? Deer destroyed our garden this year. They destroyed every last bit of it. You know? We had tomatoes, green beans, squash, all gone. All eaten down to like stubs. You know? But I love the deer, and indeed, my wife actually loves the deer. She woke up the other night and looked out the window, and the yards around our house aren't fenced, and there were actually a couple of bucks sitting in the grass with their majestic antlers. You know, that's like amazing. Right? And she got so excited she couldn't sleep. I think that's wonderful, you know. So you could say, oh no, there they are, they're eating all our plants, you know. But another way of welcoming the moment is to have this kind of openness about it. And you know, really, deer are amazing animals. You know, they're really amazing. Their lives are quite astonishing. And we can experience their lives as our lives, which they really are, if we have this different mind. And all you have to do is sit on the cushion and watch your breath, or call moo, and be totally in that emptiness. And then everything comes to life, and there's this deep connectedness. Now, you may have pain in your legs, and basically that's part of the picture too, you know. But if you work with your breath, or you work with deep mushin, the pain won't be such a big problem. In this koan, Lin Ji is delivering a teisho, and he says, there is a true person with no rank always going in and out through the portals of your face. So basically, he's saying that we think, we think that when we come to Sashin, we're trying to wake up. When we come to Sashin, we're trying to wake up. And you could say, well, of course, that's why we're here. But I think Lin Ji's position is more like what I said last night, you know. It's not true that we've come to Sashin trying to wake up. That's one way to think about it, I guess. But why did we come to Sashin in the first place? See, at the heart of our consciousness is enlightened mind. At the core of our consciousness is already Buddha mind, enlightened mind. And we've surrounded it with all of these illusions, all of these cultural instructions, personal fears, and all we're doing is, Sashin is stripping it away a little bit, getting back to that core. But why did we even come, see? So I think one way to think about Zen practice is, you know, okay, I'm unenlightened, and I'm coming to Sashin, and I'm trying to wake up. And you're free to feel that way. But there's this other way of understanding, which is actually more true. And that is that already your enlightened mind told you to come here. And so really all you have to do is get out of the way, and you're already doing this wonderful, you're already awake. You just have to get out of the way and let your big mind, your true nature, do its work. And it will do it beautifully, you know. If you want to understand, you know, there's different schools of Zen. If you want to understand Rinzai Zen, it's all about being natural in this way. So being natural doesn't mean leaving your coffee cup lying around the dining hall. It doesn't mean not having your, it doesn't mean not making your bed in the morning, or and so on. Being natural has to do with how you experience each moment. And if you experience each moment as like a threat or an obstacle, something to get through, everything becomes very heavy and dead. But you can also experience each moment as like the unfolding of your true nature. This is like a big adventure, right? Fundamentally, people are not Susan or Bob or Bill and so on. Fundamentally, enlightened. And enlightened mind is playing as Bob or Kurt, and it's going through these adventures. Yeah? And right now, your big adventure is sitting in the heat listening to the cicadas. And it's actually a wonderful adventure. It's really a beautiful adventure for Buddha mind. And this is, I think, the way to go through Sesshin, is with this heart of, what everything that happens is I'm being guided by my enlightened mind. I've been brought here by my enlightened mind, and my enlightened mind is telling me what to do. I don't always listen, I'm not always paying attention, but I want to just get out of the way and let my enlightened mind do its work. And everything that happens is in some way part of myself. And I'm just going to get out of the way and let it all happen. Or better yet, I'm going to be very still and loving and respectful and very mindful. Every minute, they have there's a tradition in the West of Santa Claus, you know. And I myself am like an anti-Santa Claus person myself, because I think it isn't good to lie to little kids and say, this is, tell them big lies and then later say, well, you're 13 years old now, that was all a lie. I'm not sure that's good for kids. But waiting for presents under the tree is really very exciting. So if you're waiting for a presence, it's really exciting, you know. The thrill of not knowing what you're going to get is much greater than actually getting the present and opening it up and there's a sweater, or even if it's the toy you wanted. You know, actually the best part of the experience is waiting, right? And then you see the box and you think, what could it be? That's a really wonderful experience, and a little bit, I think Zen practice is a little bit like that, right? Each of these moments is like a present, and we don't know what it's going to involve, and if you just have a blank mind and no expectations, when you open it up, you won't be disappointed. It'll be much better than like a Santa Claus gift, because it won't be disappointing, even a little bit. It won't be a sweater from your aunt. It'll be something really wonderful. It might not be what you wanted, but if you have the right heart, it'll be really great. This is our first day of Sesshin, and I wanted to read you something. The Sesshin tradition as we practice it, probably began in China. The particular kind of practice we're doing, Bodhidharma brought this from India, and it's possible, or it's certain, that people did a lot of meditation, but it's not exactly clear that this kind of collective practice was part of what Bodhidharma brought. This might have been something that the Chinese added. We come together to do sesshin, and when we come together to do sesshin, this is like the true expression of our participation in the Sangha. And this is like the heart of the Sangha, is sesshin. And in China, Master Baijiang wrote rules for the Zen community. And I just wanted to read them to you. I'm not sure it fits in the Taisho, but I wanted to read them anyway. These are his rules that he invented for people living in a Zen community. He said, the Zen community flourishes by having no mundane concerns. Cultivation of practice becomes solid and secure through mindfulness of Buddha. Upholding discipline is of first importance in making energetic progress. Fasting is the cure for sickness. Affliction becomes enlightenment through patient endurance of insult. Liberation comes through not separating affirmation and denial. Genuine sincerity is the real condition of community living. Doing one's utmost brings success in carrying out duties. Talk should be kept to a minimum in order to become direct. When old and young are compassionate to each other and live in harmony, there is an advance in virtue. The entry into learning is through diligent study. Having no faults comes from clearly understanding cause and effect. Old age and death warn us about impermanence. Buddhist activities become real through an impeccable, pure spirit. Dealing with visitors becomes an offering through our true sincerity. The temple is adorned by its old veterans. All affairs should be planned in advance so that they do not become laborious. The proper etiquette for community living is humility and respect. The power of concentration enables one to meet dangers without being confused. Compassion is the basis for helping all beings. I thought that was just, I never read that. I thought that was just wonderful. So, this sesshin is really something quite special for all the reasons I just talked about. But also, one of the things that makes it really special is that we come together in this way and we help one another encounter our true nature. Right? And that's really quite remarkable and wonderful. Baijiang says, you know, you can tell a sangha, you can tell a healthy sangha, a healthy community, because there's people who are old, and they've been practicing for a long time, and they've been living in this wholehearted way. And people like that are, he doesn't say this, but these in the Indian sutras, in India, these people were called old mangoes, like an old ripe mango. And in China, for some reason, they changed it to papaya. But if you read the Indian sutras, when they refer to somebody who, a man or a woman who has been practicing the way for a long, long time, they're like a ripe fruit, you know. So if you do this, maybe some of you have done this for 5 years. If you do this for another 25 years or 35 years, and you sit in this beautiful emptiness, and you experience everything as your body over and over again, you're going to be a different person. And your heart will be full of love and compassion, and concern for others will be like as automatic as breathing. And these people are called, like in the Indian tradition, old mangoes, and in Chinese, old papayas. And basically, Baijiang is saying, if a community has a few old papayas around, that's a good sign that it's a healthy community. He says that basically, in a healthy community, young and old get along, you know, and people help each other to wake up. You know, in an unhealthy community, people quarrel. They get angry, they're jealous of each other. I've seen many such communities, you know. But when people come together like this in Sashin, and they really enter that open-hearted mind, then, you know, your concern is always for other people. So, you know, this can be expressed in so many different ways. When you are doing the dishes, you are cleaning your own mind. Remember that everything is your own body. And so, you know, when you're doing the dishes, you're cleaning your own mind. This is so important to understand. The boundary between the self and the world is an illusion. Doing the dishes is a kind of meditation practice, really and truly. You're cleaning your mind as you clean the dishes. You're cleaning away your own obstacles as you do the dishes. And you're also helping everybody else to wake up. Because, of course, if there's clean pots and pans, everybody can eat another meal. So you're cleaning up your own mind, but you're helping everybody else. And putting away the leftover food, that's cleaning up your mind. It is. It's so important. Please don't think it's not. This is not like a story I'm telling you to get you to clean the dishes. It's not. It is the essence of human confusion to think that these things are separate from ourselves. You know, in Buddhism, we don't have a teaching of original sin. You know, Christianity has this teaching, original sin, that the people were born screwed up. That's not Buddhist view. But screwed up means this is not my true self. See? The minute you say that is not me, you have already fallen into samsara. And if you practice Zen long enough, you go around the Zendo thinking, oh, this is my body, this is my body, I love this sound, I love this heat. And you're happy because everything around you is alive. But as soon as you say, this is not me, it falls dead at your feet. So cleaning the dishes, you said dishes are inanimate, but this is not our way. Everything is my true body. And cleaning the dishes is like bathing my body. And it's helping everybody, right? Everybody's helped to wake up. This is like caring for my own body. Caring for others is caring for my own body. And so, you know, when I come into the zendo at night, you know, if I'm absorbed in my own thoughts and my own illusions, you know, I might slam the door and go into the bathroom and slam the door in the stall. And by the way, I've done that myself. Just, you know, nobody's perfect, right? So don't blame yourself. That's a subject for another teisho. But the point is, you know, if you're in the right mind, sometimes you become aware of others, and you want to help them, and your thoughts are on caring for this body, which we all share, this beautiful life together. I remember a person in our group went in to see Genki Roshi in Dokusan, and this person called Mu. This is part of our practice, as you know, calling Mu. And the Mu, this person called Mu, it was so clearly, the person was so clearly empty, and it was so clearly the voice of true nature. It was the most beautiful Mu. And I remember afterward, one of the members of our group was so jealous of this, you know. And it was heartbreaking to see, you know. This person who was supposed to be a leader in our group, this was a monk in our group, felt threatened by somebody else's encounter with enlightened mind. And this person later overcame this obstacle, and it has become a really deeply compassionate person. But at that stage in his life, he was practicing with too much concern for his own advancement. And it was heartbreaking. You know, we all have defects, you know. And when I realized he was jealous of his brother's achievement, it made me very sad, you know. But as I say, you know, people change, and 20 years later, this guy's a very different person now. When we think too much about ourselves, we find ourselves thinking too much about ourselves, it's a warning, right? It's like we're not in that proper mind. It's not important that other people approve of us. It's really not important that other people like us, actually. Even though there's a part of us that wants terribly to be liked or loved, you know. I think it's quite important to love others, you know, irrespective of how they feel about us. Sesshin can be a practice like that. You know, maybe you're sleeping with somebody who snores. You come to bed after sitting all day, and you might be exhausted, but you're also keyed up, you know. So you lie there in bed, and it's not only that, but it's 90 degrees outside, and this puny little fan is blowing on you. And you're thinking, I'm exhausted, I've got to get some sleep, you know. And then the guy next to you, I'd kill that man. You know? Now I'll never get to sleep, right? Well, you can always come in the zendo, right? That's okay. There's always these tensions when people live together, you know, in any kind of relationship. But it, you know, when you feel anger or resentment or any of those kinds of emotions, you know you're not in your best mind. And you go back to the cushion and watch your breath or enter mu, and sooner or later you'll have this beautiful, generous heart. So I think that's what Baijiang is getting to here. Compassion is the basis for helping all beings. Fasting is the cure for sickness. He wasn't just meaning not eating. We're all a little sick, you know. So we come here and this is like a fast, right? No iPod, no internet, no TV. You know, we're just going to do a little fasting and we get better. But it's really not a fast, right? This is like beautiful, beautiful meal. Lin Chi said to his assembly, "There is a true person with no rank, always going out and in through the portals of your face. Beginners who have not witnessed it, look, look." A monk came forward and said, "What is this true man of no rank?" In other words, you know, at the heart of my own consciousness is enlightened mind, but I'm not noticing it yet because I'm looking everywhere else, right? He needs to go into Di Mushin. And Lin Ji got down from the seat, grabbed him, and said, "You know, wake up, man. You know, look at your consciousness. Look at your own mind." And the guy just doesn't notice. And then Lin Ji is trying to inspire him to practice more deeply, you could say. And he says, "Well, what a piece of dried crap this enlightened mind is." And it's not what it seems. He's not, angry or resentful. He's trying to help this guy wake up. So the guy's going to go back to his cushion and go, "How can the enlightened mind be a piece of crap? You know, that was Lin Ji. He said that. What could he mean?" And he'll worry about it and start doing zazen. Delusion and enlightenment are like two sides of the same coin. They're just two aspects of enlightened mind. Subtly communicated with simplicity, spring opens the 100 flowers in one puff. Power pulls 9 bulls in one yank. It's hopeless. The mud and sand can't be cleared away. Everything is our rice. There is no mud. There is no sand. Everything is rice. Clearly blocking off the eye of the sweetest spring, if suddenly it bursts forth, it would flow freely. That's what we're doing here. It's like, we're unblocking the spring. You know, like the mind itself is like this fountain and a beautiful energy flowing out, and we're sort of like blocked. This is like fasting. This is like simplifying our life, and spring is going to rush forward. So, day one of Sashin, sweaty, yes, beautiful rice. Please sit and sweat. Please enter deep mushin. Please have no preferences. And everything will be like, this will be like Dharma paradise.